Welcome, dear friends, truth seekers, and curious newcomers to Earth Harmony Divinations. Today is February 8th, 2008, the Lunar New Year, the year of the Earth Rat. Happy New Year to all. My name is Elizabeth Peter. I will be hosting this show every second and fourth Friday of the month. As I do at the beginning of each show, I would like to give you a brief outline of what you can expect from my show. My mission statement is simple. I focus on sharing joy, abundance, and gratitude at all times. Be ethical and use intuition, not fear. As we are at the dawn of the spiritual age, more precisely on the fifth night of the age of ethics, our focus is zooming on to ethics from the age of powers to ethical power, integrity, and intuition. Everything we think, do, say, create must have the qualifier ethics. It must pass the ethics test, and it has to be based on intuition. Of course, we will also have time to take your calls, so please feel free to call in any time. You are not interrupting, and I would like to invite your feedback, thoughts, and insights on the current subject or any subjects we discussed in the past shows, the phenomenon of abundance, ethics, the secret, the Mayan calendar, and the Tarot. We talked about that before. And in my latest shows, we focused on the new year, predictions based on the age-old Chinese Bazi system. That was on my last show on January 25th. In fact, I will start each show with a short abundance intent or prayer. And then we will spend the entire show with my wonderful guest, John Hogue. And so without further ado, I just want to let you know about my website, www.redlotus.org, or you can also shoot me an email to elizabeth@redlotus.org. I will take as many calls as I can during this show. We only have about an hour, less than an hour. So now that you may be able to find me and find out about me, let us begin with the abundance intent. And let us take a very deep, long breath and focus on our third eye. And here we go. I focus on the Holy Spirit within as the only source of my prosperity. I notice inner presence as the only activity in my financial, personal, health, career, etc., affairs, as it is the substance of all things visible. I trust in the principle of abundance in action within as without. And so it is. And now I'm honored to have a great prophetic author, fellow truth seeker, John Hogue, the world-renowned author and Nostradamus scholar, as my guest today. John Hogue writes about Nostradamus with the clarity and interpretive accuracy of a kindred prophet. He uses his own gift of future insight, along with the geopolitical savvy of a Noam Chomsky, to unravel the complex issues affecting us today. Voices such as these are needed in our time. In 1987, John Hogue wrote the book Nostradamus and the Millennium. It sold 700,000 copies and was translated into 9 languages. The author, John Hogue, doesn't shy away from a detailed look at how the future could be dire and full of doom. But he continuously reminds us how we can avoid these prophecies, changing the hopelessness that is often accompanying the idea of an unavoidable future full of doom into a realistic starting point for change. Changing the present, as he says, is the only and best way of changing the future, which indeed will change once enough individual decides to become conscious and act consciously instead of repeating the past like robots. Today, John will be giving us a deeper insight into the future as it is unfolding in 2008 in the now. His ebook titled Predictions for 2008 is available at his website. You can visit on hopeprophecy.com/predictions2008. Just click on the link if you see that on your website on BBS Radio, or if you go to my webpage on Earth Harmony. We will be giving out his website info again at the end of the show or during the show. And without further ado, John, are you on the line? While I'm waiting for John, let me just introduce him a little further about the interview topics today. Since we have a short hour, of course, we could be talking to John for quite a long time. I would like to just narrow down our topics to some of the points that I have connected from his predictions book. Number one would be Feel the Beat of History in 2008, the current cosmic day that he will be talking about, and the revolutionary understanding and practice of meditation. Hello, John.
Hello.
How are you? Thanks for taking the time from your busy schedule to accept my invitation to be on the show today.
Yes, well, I appreciate you having me on.
Hope you're feeling much better.
Well, I'm, yes, recovering from the flu. But,
I know you had a lot of talk show invitations the last few weeks.
Yes. Yes, we did Coast to Coast and Jeff Rentz and a bunch of other people.
Well, I appreciate your time. So, John, because we only have a short hour, I would like to focus on just a few important topics from your ebook that may interest our listeners the most. I bought your book and I read it. It's very, very interesting, and I highly recommend people to purchase it on your website, and that is, again, hopeprophecy.com/predictions2008. I have this nagging question, John, before we even go into your predictions book about this, the topic from your latest book titled Nostradamus, The War with Iraq, because there's a quatrain in that, I believe it's the ninth quatrain of Nostradamus, that references the Arabian Gulf area. And because I'm from Europe myself, my heart sinks when I read this, because it says the waters of the Mediterranean Sea will be poisoned, and it just seems like a horrific event. Can you just briefly comment on that, quatrain?
Well, as I recall in my book, Nostradamus, The War with Iran, there was not a reference that I put in about a poisoning waters in the Mediterranean. However, there is a mention about this a fleet plunged into the Arabian Gulf. the Arabian Gulf is what most people in the region call the Persian Gulf, and was what Nostradamus in the 16th century used to also call what we call today the Persian Gulf. So,
do you believe that 2008 could be the year in which something crazy could happen in that arena, in that area?
Well, yes, it's a back in the book I did last year, there was always a plan B. I think you know, you could see it in prophetic circles, prophetic information. And then you also saw it actually from some of the investigative reporting that Seymour Hersh did for The New Yorker, which again and again has proven to be true, even though it's been denied again and again. And basically, there's two plans. Plan A would be, and these are basically fomented all the way back since 1992, when the neoconservative movement began to try to redefine Americans' hegemony in the world after the end of the Cold War standoff with the former Soviet Union. And the what I do in that book is trace, which is also available at hopeprophecy.com. You can go to the website and you'll see the icon for the book cover and click on it. And it'll get you to more information about Nostradamus, The War with Iran. The thing is that there's this whole long, all you have to do is follow the manifestos of the neoconservative movement. And I do that in one chapter where you see from 1992 on, with one of the major editors of the manifestos being Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney, who is the current vice president, that there has always been a plan to take down Iraq and Iran, Iraq's Saddam's regime and the Iranian Ayatollah regime. Because they were deemed, whether one agrees or not, to be the main impediment to the control of the free flow of fossil fuels to a westernized culture dominated
but,
by America.
You know, as you know, I'm quite interested in the Mayan calendar myself, and we talk about this being the fifth night on the Mayan calendar, which clearly indicates that the Age of Powers is on its way out, and we are moving into the Age of Intuition. Before that, we're in the Age of Ethics, and there is no such a thing as ethical war. So my hopes were that these neocon powers are really unable to, you know, exert any more powers. They're trying very hard, but it's diminishing by the minute.
Well, it's diminishing also because of a rather incompetent way of doing things. But I think it would be a little, from 30 years of studying prophecy, it's a little bit of a too general a brush to stroke about these eras defining what is a very complicated set of potential timelines that we always give birth to in the world. And you could also interpret the day, quote unquote, we're talking about in the Mayan calendar as the inability for government to and powers to govern.
That's true.
So it could also be a period of dissolution and chaos, not just the end of power brokers no longer being able to foment and achieve their goals. The other thing too is that just to show you how complicated it can get, in my new book Predictions for 2008, we look at how this year is a very important tilting year, tilting history, the halfway point between the interface of the dwindling influences of the Piscean Age into the rising influences of the Aquarian Age.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading your book. It rings so true about the present times, as the frauds, lies, and illusions of the Piscean Age is giving way to the knowing, progressive, no-nonsense Aquarian Age.
The Age of Science.
Latest book begins with a short summary of ancient prophecies, which does include the Mayan calendar. That is one of my greatest interests. But can you briefly explain what you call predictive astrology as the grand procession of the vernal equinox? This seems like a mouthful. How does this system fit in with the ones mentioned before, like the Mayan calendar?
Well, before that, I'd like to finish my point and say that the couple things, we have a couple of points here that kind of hang out in the air, and I want to tie them up before I go to the next point there. And one of them is that you asked earlier about, is there going to be a war? And as I was saying, there's two plans. It's a plan B, and if America cannot, if the neoconservative movement cannot manage a war through U.S. naval or military means, there's always been the secondary attempt, which would be done through Israel. Israel would make its strike on the nuclear reactors, and that would drag in the United States into a war.
Actually, that was my prediction for last year.
Well, it's actually, we're in a period right now where that could happen actually this spring at the earliest, but it would also happen around June into summer if Israel were to do the strike.
Yeah, you mentioned that when Mars it goes into Cancer again, that would be that time period, right?
Yes, this, the America always does strange things in a astrological sense in modern time. That they can they will. Almost every military, misfought military plan or disaster has happened during a Mars and Cancer transit. And since Cancer is the sign of the American country, and also magnified even more by the fact that this current president is born a Cancer and his sun is exactly 13 degrees, same degrees as the sun for the country. The situation has created a more magnified potential for military adventures going awry, And so we're not out of the woods yet with Iran and America. And of course, what I said in that book, Nostradamus, the War with Iran, was that the final scenario, I went through all the possible prophetic scenarios, which dealt with a major fight in the Persian Gulf, air attacks, regional ballistic missile attacks between Israel and Iran. But then I ended with the one that I think is probably more likely, and this has been kind of proven somewhat true by what happened in Syria in September of last year, when it was an area, a secret installation was struck by the Israeli forces in Syria. They did nothing in response, and I think that's the strategy that's going to happen. This whole strategy of having Israel get America into the war through the back door can only work if Iran counterattacks beyond just fighting anybody over their airspaces. So,
well, my theory was that perhaps China and Russia will have a bigger say in that too, because China controls our money in a way, and Russia has a say in.
Well, I spoke about that as well, and I call it in the chapter called The Money Weapon.
Yeah.
And certainly economy is going to be used more in the future. But here's the problem with that, Elizabeth. And I talk about it in more detail in the Global Economy and the Balance chapter of predictions for 2008.
Sorry, we're jumping around like
is that we have basically, to make a complicated issue as simple as possible, we have a pawnbroker economy. And China is becoming more and more the pawnbroker of U.S. debt. China could threaten to dump U.S. dollars, but if they did that, the yuan would double in value, which would crash their economy. So it's almost like it would be a Mexican standoff, as we call it, where no one's going, you know, both guns are out, both threats are out, and nobody can really pull the trigger because it would be an economic version of mutually assured destruction.
But
so,
I think with that Mexican standoff, the rest of us who want this future to be here now, like with alternative energies and such, we will just sort of sneak that in and get that going while these guys are just standing by.
Well, that is a process that starts with 2008, and I talk about that in the first chapter, which is really the alarm bell chapter of that book, which is about global warming, which we're going to see some significant tipping points already happening, and that's going to, in the climate, the tipping points that were expected to happen 10 years from now are actually going to happen now. And the good side about that is it will inspire governments, it'll give people political will and need and interest to move, begin this 36-year period of getting off fossil fuels. Now,
yeah, I don't want to get too much into detail.
More recent
about
question about
it,
the cycles of centuries, these 36-year cycles, one of the things I want to focus on in 2008 is how it's in a way as important a year as the Mayan calendar date of 2012, but it's not known that much because of all the interest and popular interest in the Mayan calendar, that there are a number of major cycles and prophecy that are rebooting, if you will, rebooting history all around this period of time. And one of the ancient most of these is something that was derived as far back as early Mesopotamian cultures of Ur and Sumer. So the Sumerians who created what's called a cosmic calendar or a cosmic clock, the great year, it's called. And that's basically in ancient times, they believed that, which makes a lot of sense to me, that the new year should start with the end of winter, which is symbolic of death and hibernation, to spring, the vernal equinox. And so New Year always was marked by the vernal equinox. Now, the line the sun takes all through the tropical constellations, the 12 constellations of the zodiac, which makes up our astrology. Every time the vernal equinox returns to its spring position, it's very slightly westward of its earlier position 12 months before. And if you counted the time in normal years it takes for the sun and the vernal equinox to be seen from that position all the way around 360 degrees, it takes over 25,000 years to do that. That is a cosmic year. And the 12 zodiacs the sun is passing through are the months of that year, which are roughly these ages, 12 ages. The age of Aquarius is the new month that we're beginning to enter. The age of Pisces was the previous month. They last a little over 2,000 years apiece. Now, when you get even farther down into it, you realize that not only is there a cosmic month, but that history has a beat, has a rhythm. It ticks. The clock, the great cosmic clock, ticks, and each tick-tock of the clock, the tick is 36 years long in normal years. The talk is 36 years long in normal years. They pass from yang cycles to yin cycles. That means 36 years of cosmic day, daytime, is where things are initiated and husbanded and planted. 36 years of yin, cosmic night, is when things are harvested and we respond to the things that have been planted, feast or famine, depending, using the farming metaphor. What we have happening now at this year, 2008, is the talk from the TikTok. We have the yin 36-year period beginning. All the last 36 years since 1972, 73, when Cosmic Day began, all the stuff that's overshadowed and been seeded for the last 36 years is now going to hatch out in harvests, bitter and sweet harvests, for the coming 36 years.
But do you believe it's going to be a
examples.
Feast or a famine?
You have, for instance, in 1972-73, that's when international terrorism from the Middle East really got its start, with the Munich Olympics terrorist attack and also the Yom Kippur War between the Arab states and Israel, which led to the Arab oil embargo, which also focused from 72 on the importance of Middle East in our needs and oil in the needs of the Western civilization. That's a negative overshadowing. Now, positive, and that has led to this situation now where oil has peaked 36 years later, and we're now reaping the 36 years of living with addiction with fossil fuels. Now, the next 36 years, we'll have to get off of fossil fuels, and it'll take about 36 years. Until 2044, we'll probably have a fossil-free civilization, fossil-fuel-free. Now, positive side of that, looking on the other side of it, is that one saw in the 72-73 the actual spread of Eastern mystical thought from the East to the West, which also saw a flood of people from the West to actually go to the East to be in the communities of people like Osho and Maharishi and other people. And there was a kind of what I call the axis synthesis shift of East and West started happening 36 years ago. And conversely, Western technology started to go eastward. And now we're out of that as a more interconnected global society, which has its positive sides, is that it's going to be harder and harder to go to war with your neighbor because your interests are no longer blocked off by national context and national political borders. If China bombs America, they lose their market. If America bombs China, they lose their factories. So it's kind of one of those wonderful states of accidental history that are actually leading towards the end of war as we know it, except for terrorism being the new version of it. But anyway, another positive from 72 is that we had this wonderful awareness of ecology be born collectively in the early 70s, which led to the EPA and Environmental Protection Agency. And now, 36 years later, that's being seeded, is now harvesting in a full-fledged mainstream interest in the future of the Earth's ecology, which is eventually going to be a very positive thing when you have all these political campaigners from left, right, and center all talking about how we have to get off fossil fuels. It's a unique situation.
You call that the year 2008 marks the beginning of business shifting in the next 36 years. Hello, can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me, John?
Well, I'll hold the line. The line is dead.
Okay, so we had some technical difficulties there. The year 2008 marks the beginning of business shifting in the next 36 years from greed to a need to be green, is what John calls this in his book. So let's shift over to American politics, John. You're talking about politics swaying to the left or the right. I'm saying, aren't we becoming more centered and sober and starting to move towards the middle in American politics, no matter who the candidate or which candidate wins?
Well, we were certainly the potential, I think, is what I said, that we might go from centrist to right in the coming years. But I don't know. There seems to be, certainly with the rise of the Kennedys supporting Barack Obama and all that, there certainly seems to be a surge of the pendulum moving a little left. Although I think it is, I think what's happening certainly is that what may be the thing that happens is the pendulum is moving from away from extreme ideas, right or left, into what I call the invisible majority. You know, 40 years ago, we had the silent majority of Richard Nixon's campaign, the people that weren't actually addressed by the political sides. I think there's a huge invisible majority of people who are independently thinking voters who really would like to find some way to get out of the two-party system.
Exactly. That's what I'm hoping, that they're going to start listening to the invisible majority for a change. And you also talked about the Black Kennedy situation, and that you see two possible winners of this election. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I wrote, I signed off that chapter the night before the New Hampshire primaries, and for the record, so it hadn't been altered since that point. I found it rather interesting that I also warned in that chapter that I didn't think my oracle, as I call this intuitive phenomenon that I use, I didn't think it would, I kept trying to find some answers to what was going on for the Republican side, and the oracle just basically to make, it doesn't really speak, but it's a more intuitive thing, but if I were to put words to it, basically gave impressed upon me that it does not pick losers. So then that wasn't disparaging to the Republican side, it was just simply, because I've been making presidential predictions since 1968, and I, so far, in 10 presidential election cycles, I've gotten all 10 correct.
Well, I find it interesting how correct you were again, because it seems like Hillary and Obama are just going to go head-to-head, it seems. And
yes, and they. Although I think I'm going to be wrong about the Republicans having to fight to the end of the convention cycle, but it does look like the Democrats are going to have to decide their candidate in the convention in August, the way it's going now. The other intriguing thing that's coming up, because one of I was trying to kind of share with the readers in that chapter of from predictions from 2008 that I, you know, sometimes the future, when I see it, sends me a riddle. And I don't understand. It's like just before 2000 election, I was telling people on radio, I said, Al Gore, I know absolutely certain he's going to win by 500,000 votes. He is the next president of the United States. And I also know equally, for no reason I can figure out, that I'm going to be completely wrong.
Well, that was true. That turned out to be true.
Yeah, and he did win by 500,000 votes, and that's when I came to understand that whatever this thing is I've been doing is really sensing the popular vote and not the vagaries of 18th century electoral college theory. It's just simply tuning into people's energies and then getting this sense that this is how many people. So I learned that. Now I got a new thing to deal with. I've been seeing Hillary Clinton as being president in 2008, since 1998, when I came on The View on their Halloween show, of course. be asked about whether Hillary Clinton would be the next senator of New York State. And I said, not only will she be a senator, but she will be president of the United States in 2008. And they thought that was pretty funny. now it looks like it may have some,
you know, the
some
Chinese
possibility.
Senators are
but
saying,
at the same time, as far back as 2006, I started seeing Barack Obama as another presidential future president. Are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me? John? We lost John again. I'm sorry. John? Let's wait for him to come back on. We will probably continue with a few more points here. I would like to ask him about, is America the new version of Imperial Germany, like he mentions in the book? And about the CEO oligarchy, or as he calls it, CEO oligarchy, power changing hands and in the next future years. So hopefully we can get him back on soon. John also talks about helium-3, which is a substance that could be found in the dirt on the moon. And we might be able to tap into that resource as an incredible, inexhaustible fuel source. But there are so many other alternative energy sources now available to us that I am just hoping that that will be the biggest news for. Hello? Are you on?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, we keep losing you here.
Yes. I guess the wiretappers don't like what I'm saying.
I think I may have that problem on my side.
Are you there?
I don't know. Can you hear me? Hello? Sorry, folks, all about the technical difficulties we were experiencing here. So going back to our guest, John Hogue, and he is the well-known Nostradamus author, and I call him a prophetic author because he also prophesizes about many other areas that are very important to us right now. And John, most Americans are definitely only concerned about three major things in their lives, and that is their dollar, the economy, their healthcare, education, their children, their children's future. How do you feel our lives are going to be affected by all these future events that you're describing in your book?
Well, even though, of course, what happened to the dollar it affects everybody on the planet. So that's one. If I understand your question, what Americans focus on in regards to perhaps what other people outside of America focus on. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, everyone is worried about the money systems. You know,
yeah.
There's all these rumors about the money system collapsing.
Well, I will make this prediction. It's not going to collapse from its own devices. There's not going to be a depression, at least for another 2 years. We may enter a deep recession at worst, but not a depression, because as far as the economy is concerned, it's, even though it puts on the airs of being one of the most down-to-earth banking, finance, and et cetera, is considered very materialistic, down on the earth, four square, not very esoteric. I often find that the whole history of currency is really about something that's as probably the biggest fantasy that we've ever sustained, and that is, if enough people believe a certain thing has value, then their belief gives it value. And, you know, we used to do it with precious metals. And then when that became there were too many people, we had promissory notes that precious metals would be passed. And then we reached a point where just the paper notes were enough. You didn't have to back them up with anything when we got off the gold standard. And then it moved from paper to plastic money and credit cards. And then it moved to electronic transferences where money became photons and electrons. So as far as the system is concerned, it will always recreate itself as long as it can convince enough people to follow the fantasy. What I've been saying over the last 20 years is that the Achilles heel to the economy is global warming. It's the onset of climatic disasters, superstorms that begin being too hard to sustain the civilization as it is. I mean, we see some cracks in the sustainability of it from Hurricane Katrina.
But don't you think that the illusion of money, that what you just described, is doesn't that still belong to the Piscean age? And now that we're moving into the Aquarian age, that illusion will be lifted, and there we will be finding the reality that we are living in without the illusion. And that is why I'm feeling like the money system has to go, because it's an illusion.
Well,
we'll find something else in its place.
Well, another illusion that's more appropriate for the Aquarian age, certainly. No, it's a good point you make, Elizabeth, that it's it is a Piscean age concept. Of course, money goes farther back into the age of Aries, the age of Taurus. Way back. So to step back and see it from a broader scope about everything, what we're basically moving out of is an era that was based on you know, the 12th house, the fantasy, hidden enemies, spiritual mysticism, a paternal expression of a feminine age, in hierarchies, priests, a faith-based religions, even the religions that preceded the predominant religion of the last 2,000 years, Christianity, have taken on a Piscean age, more belief-oriented, faith-oriented demeanor. But now, as we enter with this year, the tilt very ever so slightly starts moving and inclining towards the Aquarian dispensations. Now, faith will be less and less in the next 200 years, and it will be superseded by more desire to know, not to believe, but to know, not to have faith something is true, but if have direct experience that it's true or not. I think this is the Aquarian age idea, is that actually religion will become more scientific. Economy will become more scientific. I think in the next 36 years, you are going to see the breakdown of the Piscean-style economy. And in its place will be more a new value system. Certainly a new value system is going to have to be created, because the current value system is heading for a collapse. I often think that if we have not had a major collapse of the system in the next 2 or 3 years, we're certainly going to have it by what I constantly call in my work the Roaring 2020s, which is sort of where a lot of issues begin cascading into insustainability. And that's why my biggest concern, biggest warning about the future, a warning that we can avoid so that we can avoid it, is that we are going to enter a period of emergency rule that will most likely start certainly in the 2020s. And unfortunately, the level in which that becomes fascist dictatorships of a new kind under the term emergency rule will depend on what we do today to soften the blow or alter the way we behave in the next 10 years so that we can sustain ourselves and adapt to the changes of climate and things that are coming.
Yeah, you briefly, we only have time for a little bit to talk about the alternative resources that you talk about, helium-3, which is fascinating that you're saying it's found on the moon. But of course, there's 100 different types of alternative energy sources that the great inventor Tesla, for example, came up with a few himself, and he was ahead of his time. Even in this decade, he would be ahead of his time, because it seems like it's just the powers are just not letting this technology to be used. Do you have hope that we can finally start implementing these alternative resources?
Oh, I think it always is a necessity is always the what the factor, the element that's needed in breaking through dogma. And we are now entering, especially from 2008 onward, an era of necessity where, you know, the issue of our sustainability as a civilization is at stake. And that when enough people see the collective danger, and when enough people see that this almost World War III that we're fighting is with the world, and the enemy is not some other country or terrorist, but our own programmed stupidity that we pass on from generation to generation. When that is seen, the seeing of it begins the liberation from it. And when it becomes an issue of life and death for the human race, I think you'll see a lot of old givens be gone and a lot of icons be broken by iconoclasts. And simply because it's not just for the reason of doing it and being contrarian, but it's when contrariness turns into necessity, then you'll see the Tesla ideas embraced. The beliefs of Reich, Wilhelm Reich, embraced. You will see many of the mystics that were considered cult gurus of the 80s and 90s by the end of this century will be considered some of the great world teachers of new religious ideas.
You were talking about the CEO oligarchy or CEO-garchy. That you're saying that these are the new powers that are emerging?
Yes. There is a new aristocracy that is arising, and we have now two-tiered steps of power. We have electoral power through the politicians, but more and more in the next 36 years, there's a power above politicians, and that is the power of the CEOs. Of the executive, the power, we're entering a little mini age for the next 18 years, which I call the age of the executive. And that's because Pluto is transiting Capricorn.
Yeah, I wanted to cover that a little bit too, if we have like 5 minutes left.
Right. Yeah, so the thing is that the oligarchy, CEO oligarchy is, has different kinds of basically what we as people need to do is find a way to get their attention and vote in a different way. Not only will we vote with ballots for our political leaders, we need to vote with our supply and demand to make actually ecology and life affirming things on the planet profitable for these people and profitable for everybody. Basically, it's a concept of bringing more richness. That richness is a spiritual attribute that needs to spread wealth in physical as well as spiritual dimensions.
Well, yes, I believe that we are moving into an age where we're finally able to take over the power of the people. And you mentioned Thomas Paine and this wonderful quote from him, give me liberty or give me death. And this used to be the fearless American saying. Now, of course, we can say, does that still characterize Americans, or have we become just fattened and complacent, or can we go back to that ideology in this new Pluto and Capricorn age? I'm hoping we can.
Well, you know, with the Pluto and Capricorn, it takes 248 years for the cycle to recycle to the Pluto and Capricorn. It's usually a time of revolution, constructive revolution. That is, things are dreamed of in Sagittarius Pluto transit. You know, Jesus Christ dreamed his dream of a church and that Peter would be the rock to build it upon. Mm-hmm. But, it took when he was crucified and then the Pluto moved into Capricorn, it took St. Paul and Peter and the apostles to actually build the dream into something solid on the earth that people could understand. And that's kind of a similar process we're in now. We've moved out of Pluto Sagittarius. We're now moving into Pluto and Capricorn, which hasn't happened since the Age of Reason, since Voltaire, Rousseau, and Benjamin Franklin and the founding fathers of the United States declaring the Declaration of Independence. So it's a time of construction, of reconstructing society, finding new architectural designs for ideas. For instance, 248 years ago, the idea of the pursuit of happiness was a completely revolutionary thing that we take for granted. We're going to see new declarations from new visionaries. It's definitely a time when an individual can change the course of the future with what they dream.
Since Obama used to be a constitutional scholar, don't you think that he could lead us into that phase again, where we can start thinking more local, like colonial type economy rather than global? My hope is that we go back to more local systems, local even exchange systems, rather than having this federal, heavy federal load on our backs.
I don't think that he might have. It's surprising to me that he doesn't often talk about constitutional law. I often find that politicians like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Ron Paul tend to think more in pure constitutional law than I've so far heard from Obama. But it's interesting to note that the governor of California already saw that coming. And when I looked into it, I realized the next 36 years is you can't sustain democracies with these huge populations. They do have to become more localized so that people power can really work. And when the world becomes more a global society, you will probably see smaller and smaller units of people voting in their local immediate means. And the great debate that will happen in the future is, what are those things which are interfederal that affect, where individual groups affect the whole world? And that will be more what a future parliament of the world will look at in another 50 years. But the United States is going to move in the next 36 years from the United States is to change the verb to the United States are. And will be more a looser federal system. And some governors like Arnold Schwarzenegger have already seen that and are planning for
it. And Richardson in New Mexico, they're really wonderful governors. And on that note, we ran out of time, John. I really appreciate you coming on the show today. And hopefully maybe we can have you back again in the future, and I hope you will have a wonderful new year in 2008, and lots of success to you and your future publications.
Yes, and thank you, and anybody who wants to see the book, just go to hogueprophecy.com, HogueProphecy.com, and click on the icon in my homepage, and it'll take you to a study of the book.
All of John's books are wonderful reads, and I can highly recommend him to everyone. So please go to his website and get his book today. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.